Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Fourth quarter on our Overreaction Monday on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline, and we want you to join us in the conversation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. And Gojo, I want to hear from the listeners because I still want somebody to tell me I'm wrong for looking at that game that the Buffalo Bills lost yesterday down in Tampa and actually being more discouraged about their prospects about getting to the playoffs and then what they can do once they're in the tournament. Because I didn't like what I saw on the line of scrimmage, both sides of the ball with that team, and I feel like that's ultimately going to be the fatal flaw that does them in. Tell me I'm wrong.
Well, Chris, I'd say this, like, we'd seen that from them all season long, right? Like, I don't know, coming out of yesterday, I felt definitely more encouraged just because Josh Allen was able to turn it on, right? Mm. That's the way this entire Bills operation has been built for the last couple of years, which is defensively, which they're down probably their best defensive player in Trey White out with injury. We're all built to support the offense, and really the offense is just built to be an extension of Josh Allen. He made the progress necessary to play MVP caliber football last year. We hadn't seen as much of that because teams did what they've done to the Chiefs and are playing back and off them and trying to keep Steph Diggs and the rest of those guys in check. So we at least saw Superman come out of that phone booth, and I feel like that, compared to what we've seen for the rest of the year, has to be a little bit encouraging.
Yeah, we saw Superman come out of the phone booth. He rushed for 66 yards in the second half, but he also ended up getting banged up in that game, and they had to address that on the sideline, and he left Raymond James Stadium in a walking boot. Like, the question about what they've been doing on the offensive side of the ball that has been all year long, are they asking too much from Josh Allen? And I feel like the answer that we're getting back is yes. There's a reason why this team has lost five of the last eight games that they've played. It's because they can't control the line of scrimmage. They can't stop the run when it matters. They can't run the football when it matters. Even though they did have some design quarterback runs, ultimately, those two deficiencies is what did them in down there. In overtime, knowing that they couldn't slow down that Tampa Bay Buccaneers run game, they dropped an extra defender down in the box. They tried to pressure Tom Brady on a critical third down, and they end up hitting Rashad Perriman on a crosser when he's in man coverage against Tremaine Edmonds, and it ends up being game, set, match. At some point, the Buffalo Bills front seven is going to have to step up and be able to stop the run. At some point, their offensive line is going to have to be able to move people at the point of attack in the run game. But based on the sample size that we have, I don't think that either group is capable of getting that done. And knowing how football changes once we get to this time of the year going into the playoffs, I just feel like it doesn't bode well for the Buffalo Bills and them potentially being able to get into the tournament and actually do some damage. So, yeah, I can't be bullish on the Buffalo Bills, even though Josh Allen had an otherworldly performance. I just can't.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. That all sounds eerily familiar, Chris. And I would say this, the Bills probably less predicated on injury than the comparison I'm about to make, but this feels exactly like where we're at with the Baltimore Ravens, right? Team that came in with a ton of expectation, team with a quarterback that's capable of doing things physically that few other quarterbacks on earth can do. Josh Allen is now one of four quarterbacks, including Lamar Jackson, who's thrown for 300 and rushed for 100 in an NFL football game. They're capable of that. The rest of the team around them has proved incapable here. I can't explain it as much for Buffalo because they brought back a lot of those same pieces here. Cole Beasley, Stephon Diggs, Emmanuel Sanders in that receiving room are all supposed to be producing a lot more than we've seen this season. Josh Allen's good enough to snake bite you on any given day, but we're certainly seeing the wheat separate from the chaff in the AFC, and the Bills are probably going to be, when it comes to the playoffs, because I still think they're going to be one of these teams in the postseason, but they're going to be below that line of demarcation of teams I expect to compete for an AFC title and even represent this conference in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, the whole goal for the Buffalo Bills was to be able to get to where they got last year, which is the AFC Championship game, and hopefully being able to get themselves into the big game at SoFi Stadium. But, I mean, now we're talking about them not winning their division and fighting for their playoff lives. Now, I'm with you. I think that they're going to get in the tournament. When you look at their remaining schedule, they got the Carolina Panthers, who are platooning at the quarterback spot. So, you know, if you got two quarterbacks, you got no quarterback. Then they're on the road in Foxborough. Then they've got the Atlanta Falcons at home and the New York Jets at home. So it's a very soft schedule over the course of the next 4 weeks. It gives them an opportunity to get right, lick their wounds, and get ready for the postseason. But based on where they're potentially be seated, I don't know that we're not talking about them getting bounced after the wild card weekend. So I just, again, for a team that had championship aspirations, it feels like we're moving the goalposts when it comes to what we are talking about as far as success and what that looks like for this version of the Buffalo Bills. But I think a lot of that has to do with them being exposed by the rest of the NFL with their groups up front.
Yeah, there's certainly been a struggle with the group up front. I don't think it's been a banner year for Brian Daboll, who was getting a lot of head coaching looks last offseason, their offensive coordinator. We want to hear from you, though. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Let's go to Brian in Pennsylvania. Brian, you're on Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. What you got?
Hey, guys. Longtime listener of ESPN. I want to say, Chris and Mike, you guys are doing a great job. Appreciate everything you do and love listening to you guys.
Appreciate that. So, thank you very much.
Lifelong Bills fan, and I had high hopes going into the season like a lot of people did, but being let down. I did want to ask you guys what you thought the Bills needed to do to kind of get on track and get into the postseason and get a run at it. But where do you think we're going to be at the end of the season?
Well, Chris, I'd say this too, and we appreciate the call, Brian. I think getting into the postseason this year, again, per ESPN's FPI, of the 7-6 teams in the AFC, and there are five of them right now, the Bills have by far the best odds, 77% to make the postseason based on that schedule Chris read to you. Chris, I'm looking more at their problems, like what do they do from here going forward? They were 0-5 in one-score games in the NFL this year. History tells us that usually tends to even out, and that next year, that's a good sign if you're looking for a bounce-back season from Buffalo. But you know this as well as anybody. In the NFL, you got to be built to get out of your division first and foremost, and I think that's where the Bills are going to have to look along the lines of scrimmage to try and figure out personnel-wise, how can we bolster this thing to make sure that we are capable of withstanding what New England's brought back to the table? Because I think that's the calculation error that a lot of us made in assessing this offseason, was assuming that New England wouldn't be able to get back this quickly to where we've seen them.
No, you're right. I think that's the focus for Sean McDermott and for Brandon Bean. Like, that's what it has to be. How can we beat the New England Patriots? Because everybody assumed with the season sweep that we saw in 2020 by the Buffalo Bills over the Pats that this was going to be the Bills' division moving forward, and that's just not the case right now. The New England Patriots by far have looked to be the more dominant team over the course of the season. We're talking about them winning 7 straight at 8 of their last 9. So New England has kind of rebuilt this thing quicker than everybody expected, and in order to get on their level, you're going to have to follow a similar blueprint, which is being able to retool that offensive line and then hoping that some of the guys that you have on the defensive front end up growing up and playing a lot bigger. Now, to the Bills' defense, they did miss Star Latulele for a little bit. He was out this season. Tremaine Edmonds missed some time this season. So those are two huge components of your front seven. But you're waiting for A.J. Epenesa to grow up. You're waiting for Greg Rousseau to grow up. I mean, you're waiting for Boogie Basham to grow up. There are some guys that will be a part of your front seven moving forward that will develop into impact players under Sean McDermott. So I think they've got some pieces on the roster that can be a part of the answer on how they get this thing fixed. But in the short term right now, it's not going to help them. Like, they're going to get in the tournament, and it's going to be an early exit because, again, you can't control the line of scrimmage, and that is fundamental to the game of football. If you can't do that, then you're going to be exposed, especially when you start talking about playoff caliber football.
Yeah, and we've seen in a spread league, it's been a bit of a different bag with that in the last few years. It's looked different than usual. I'm going to be curious what the league-wide response is, especially in the AFC, to what we've seen this season as people have shrunk this thing down.
Well, I hear where you're coming from, Gojo, and we say that football has changed because it's a spread league, but all you got to do if you're trying to figure out exactly what I'm talking about is go back to last year's Super Bowl with the Kansas City Chiefs and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and we saw how a dominant front seven exposed a deficient offensive line. We saw the lack of a running game, the lack of balance affect Pat Mahomes. Like, those are the things that matter when you start talking about competing at the highest levels of this sport, and so that's what Buffalo has got to get fixed. Otherwise, you're going to continue to put Josh Allen in harm's way by not giving him something to lean on outside of him running the football himself or him dropping back to throw the ball 40-plus times.
I'm with you. And listen, it can look different ways. Like, hell, we're 2 years removed from a Super Bowl where the Chiefs won. They had a very good offensive line, and Nick Bosa still had 12 pressures in a game that they came back and won against the San Francisco 49ers. It's not always going to look the same, but it still involves. You got to have great big people up front that can execute whatever scheme you want. That's the biggest difference for the Bills and the teams that are going to try and accomplish at the high end of the AFC right now. Coming up next, from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows, why the Urban Meyer experiment in Jacksonville needs to be over as soon as freaking possible before the worst case scenario starts to happen. That's next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, typically I don't like to be that guy that says, I told you so. Because who wants to be that guy, right? We all know that guy. We don't really like that guy. But in this instance, when it comes to the Jacksonville Jaguars hiring Urban Meyer, I got to say it. I told you so. This was a bad decision from the outset, and we can point to the staff hirings that he made that were controversial, the decision to sign Tim Tebow to the offseason roster. We can look at the optics of the situation after the game against the Bengals on a short week where he decided not to travel back with the team, and then we saw him out at a restaurant, and he was receiving a lap dance by somebody that was not his wife.
Call it what it is. It was a lap dance.
There are a lot of things that are hard for owner Shad Khan to explain, and the latest of which is a report that came out of Jacksonville over the course of this weekend that says he got into a screaming match with wide receiver Marvin Jones, and that Marvin Jones had to be talked into returning back to the team facility. And then on top of that, we hear grumblings about him berating some of his assistant coaches and referring to them in losers or something to that effect, although Meyer did deny actually using the word losers. So it seems like it's all bad in Jacksonville, and then we saw the optics of him not necessarily wanting to give his former assistant coach Mike Vrabel a handshake after the Titans got the dub on Sunday. It just seems like things are going sideways down in Jacksonville, and Urban Meyer finds himself yet at the center of another scandal, another controversy, in a spot where he was supposed to be the savior.
Yeah, this was Urban Meyer after the game being asked about those reports of him getting into it with his assistants over the weekend.
It's calling someone a loser, that's inaccurate. I have high expectations for our coaches. I'm very demanding of our coaches. And expect guys to be held accountable for their positions. And at times when they're not, those are we address it. But I assure you there is not whatever report, Amy told me something about that. That's nonsense.
I used far harsher words than that. How dare you sell me short in this spot here. But, you know, Chris, this with Urban has been a series of decisions that undermine confidence, right? All of this, he came in with the burden of proof on his side. Urban Meyer's a guy who off the field certainly has a number of things you are absolutely within your rights to not like about the way he's done business, not like the way about the way he has dealt for things. But I will say, coming into this, I looked at this and said, this is a guy who has been highly successful at a lot of these spots that he's had along the way, and it's not always looked the same on the field at each spot. And so I wanted to say, from a football standpoint, man, you might have a chance. But every stop along the way, there's been little things done, whether it has been football decisions or decisions that are tangent to football, that have constantly undermined his credibility to a group of guys that are vastly different than what he had to deal with. There are some people that are just wired to deal with college kids, that are used to that power dynamic, that are used to the power you've got over the media in certain markets in these ways, and the access and all of the above. And there are certain people that can have that ability to turn it on with grown folks and can't. And thus far, we have not seen anything demonstrated from this process here. And that latest one with Marvin Jones, who by all accounts when you talk to people, is one of the nicest, most mild-mannered human beings playing football in the NFL right now. If you're coaxing that out of dudes in the same building where this kind of stuff is leaking out, then Chris, I'm going to venture a guess that you failed a lot of those same tests behind the scenes, the day-to-day stuff that matters a lot more than any hiring or firing you're going to make as a coach.
Absolutely. I mean, we had new UVA head coach Tony Elliott on, and he talked about the importance of relationships with his players, and I think it's even more so in the NFL ranks because we know that owners will make changes when it comes to head coaches rather than players. That's just how the business is set up. That's the dynamic. And so when it comes to Urban, it feels like there's a lack of respect for what he's done or how he's treated the guys down there. And he came in with serious questions on his credibility because of some of the decisions that he made early on in his tenure. And so I'm not surprised that this is happening. I hate that it puts Trevor Lawrence, a generational talent, in a situation where you're now questioning whether or not he's going to develop properly because Urban hasn't necessarily made decisions to support him the way that he should have early on in Trevor's career. So, I mean, when Trevor Lawrence has to go to the coach on the sidelines and ask for James Robinson to be put back in because Urban decided he was going to bench him, that's a problem, especially on an offense that doesn't have a ton of playmakers. So when your rookie quarterback has to do that, that just tells you the state of affairs and the lack of overall leadership, the lack of a plan down in Jacksonville. And so I'm worried about Jacksonville if they decide to stay with Urban Meyer. I think it's clear and obvious now that they need to have a change and that this Urban Meyer experiment hasn't worked out.
Yeah, this is different than college ball because you don't have to worry about recruiting, right? You don't have to lay a foundation. You don't need continuity there to try and keep that life source in. Much like when you're a player in the NFL, it is echoed to you often. If you cannot get the job done, we will ship you out and find someone who can. That is the spot that Urban Meyer is at right now because he hasn't been able to develop those relationships in the way that you just talked about. We have seen in every stop for Urban, it has usually ended in scandal. There has been something that's happened there that's been covered up by lots of winning that's gone on in the meantime. We didn't get to any of that winning here in time to cover up the stuff that we saw off the field. We all know that's been a part of the equation. And so if you show us again that once it's going to walk like a duck, talk like a duck, and quack like a duck, and you're not going to get the wins that come with all that, then Chris, you're absolutely right. You got to default to make sure you protect the asset that has the best chance in this league to alter your future, and that's the quarterback in Trevor Lawrence.
No doubt about it. And so I'm just hoping that Shad Khan recognizes that and makes the appropriate decisions in terms of the future of the franchise, especially at the head coaching spot. It doesn't feel good right now, and it's hard to see a place where this turns in a positive direction under the leadership of Urban Meyer. I'm just saying, Gojo, I told you this was going to come down the pike, and now we're finally here. But coming up next, how does Jalen Ramsey being out impact the Rams defense on Monday Night Football? We'll have that, but before that, we've got this read from Man in the Arena, and I feel like I should be the unofficial spokesperson for Man in the Arena, just how locked in I am on Tom Brady in this docuseries and the podcast. So here we go. Join host Gautam Chopra as he explores what Tom Brady has meant to football and the world in Man in the Arena, a new podcast from ESPN Plus and Religion of Sports. A companion piece to Gotham's ESPN Plus docuseries, this 10-part podcast examines the improbable ripple effects of Brady's career. Things that have forced us to rethink everything we thought we knew about time, hatred, perfection, even fate. The podcast is brought to you by State Farm, ZipRecruiter, and Rocket Mortgage. Listen and follow Man in the Arena now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and stream the docuseries on ESPN Plus. It's Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, Canty and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Overreaction Monday here on Canty and Golic Jr., Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. If your pet is hurt in a car accident, Progressive pays up to $1,000 in vet expenses with free pet coverage. Visit Progressive.com. And Gojo, tonight we got a big-time matchup in the NFC West as the Arizona Cardinals and the Los Angeles Rams tangle it up the second time this season. Now, we know what happened in the first game. The Rams were flying high after they beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, only to run into a buzzsaw and get beat down by Cliff Kingsbury and company to the tune of 37-20. And so in that matchup, we know that the Cardinals had a season-high output of 216 yards on the ground, so that's got to be an area where the Rams defense has to lock in on. But now, with getting the news about Jalen Ramsey being out because of COVID protocols, we're talking about an absence that could potentially loom large, especially when it comes to the pass defense for the Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah, it's a massive loss. We saw, according to Caesars, the line went from 2.5 to 3 in favor of the Cardinals in this game. And I'm sure it's got to be frustrating in some of this. Tyler Higbee, the other name that we mentioned tonight on this list, apparently had a positive test that was followed by two negatives, according to sources telling Adam Schefter. And if his PCR test comes back overnight negative, he'll come off the COVID list on Tuesday. So even though it could be a false positive, he's out tonight. It's an abundance of cautions type situation, Chris, that we're seeing affect a lot of people in sports. And I'm not going to lie, going into tonight's game, I thought this was going to be a good opportunity for the Rams to potentially get a much-needed win. And part of that was going to be, all right, Jalen Ramsey in that secondary being able to affect this game. He's the overwhelming strength. We've seen teams like the Packers with dynamic receivers really pick on some of the other guys in that secondary. You take him out of there, and my confidence starts to shift a little bit now, Chris. I thought it was going to take a Herculean effort to get them back on track. I'd have to imagine this is massively advantage Cardinals from here on out.
No doubt about it. And for the Rams, I mean, this couldn't have happened at a worse time, because if you end up dropping this game to the Cardinals, you're talking about being down three games in the win column, and really it's more like 3.5, because they would have had the season sweep over you, and you've only got four games left to go. So any chance that you had of being able to win the NFC West goes out of the window. So that's the thing about this matchup and these losses for the Rams, that's kind of going to be tough to digest. But in looking at the Cardinals side of this is a huge opportunity for them, knowing what they've got in front of them, to be able to try to get a win to secure the division and then set your sights on being able to hold on to that number one seed in the conference, because they do have the best record of anybody. And it's a big difference in terms of being the number one seed versus potentially dropping to the number three seed if you drop this game. So that's one of those things for the Cardinals where you've got a lot on the line as well in terms of trying to set yourself up to be able to make a run once you get to the tournament. So I'm intrigued by this matchup. I think what it's ultimately going to come down to is the Rams' ability to take care of the football, because that's something that they haven't shown over the course of the last month or so. They got it cleaned up against the Jacksonville Jaguars, but that is the Jacksonville Jaguars, and we know the turmoil that that team is going through. Matt Stafford in the three games prior has had multiple turnovers in each of those matchups. So that's the one thing that I want to see going up against a defense that just forced four interceptions against Andy Dalton a week ago. So that's going to be the key for me. If that Rams offense can take care of the football, then I think they give themselves a pretty good chance to make this a fourth quarter game.
They do. The struggle for me is always going to be what we've seen as of late from the Rams up front, too. Like, I can't unsee that after starting the season ranked tied for first in the league through about a quarter of the season, having only given up 8 sacks, that they have been an absolute turnstile since then. Part of that is injury, and now tonight, going to be without Havenstein, going to be without Brian Allen, their center, also on the COVID-19 reserve list. Like, you had a crack foundation already that's been part of this with your quarterback. And Chris, I mean, Matthew Stafford came out himself, I believe it was on a podcast, and said, you know, as people have talked about him potentially being hurt, him dealing with a back injury, he said, I'm just not playing good enough. And so I got to point the finger squarely there. If that's going to be the case, I'm going to take Matthew Stafford at his word and say the difference between where this team was at the start of the season and now is the fact that you had a quarterback that was brought over there to be the jet fuel in this offense. Sean McVay wanted to be able to pass in more obvious situations, wanted to be able to push the ball more down the field. I know losing Robert Woods has certainly hurt that cause, but Matthew Stafford's got to be more accurate and take better care of the football, like you said, or else this is going to continue to slide, especially in tonight where it's going to have to be a shootout. Now that that back into your defense lost its best piece here, Aaron Donald's going to be great, but those parts pair together. Pass rush and pass defense are impossible to separate almost. And so now without him, you got to be able to put up points to win this one.
And it's interesting that you're talking about the pairing on the defensive side of the ball, but you also have to look at the pairing on the offensive side of the ball for the Rams as well, right? Because how much better will Matt Stafford be if he has the opportunity to operate with play action, knowing that they have a run game that could potentially threaten the Cardinals' defense? Because, Gojo, if we're talking about the areas of this Cardinals team that can get got, their run defense is a place where they're suspect. They're ranked 29th in yards per carry. So that's one of those areas, if Sony Michel can get going early, that protects the offensive line to some degree, keeping them out of obvious downs and distances where they're forced to drop back and throw the football, but then also on the back end of that, potentially creating some voids by getting some of those defensive backs to come up to try to help in run support, being able to hit those shots over the top. So to me, if they can establish that ground game early, that can alleviate some pressure off of Matt Stafford, and I think we see a much better version of him and we start to see Sean McVay's vision for what he wants his offense to look like, one that can play smash-mouth football and then hit over the top with huge, explosive plays in the passing game.
Yeah, I feel like that's something we've always got to remind people now, right, is this Rams' current iteration, the Sean McVay era of the Rams, was built on being able to pound the rock first. Like, once they brought Andrew Whitworth over there were articles written about how for Sean McVay, that was one of the guys that he spent so much time connecting with when he first got there, because he was brought over to help be a difference maker, because Sean knew all that stretch zone I want to run, that's the foundation for this offense. Everyone we've seen in the McVay and the Shanahan tree, it is all built on being able to do that in a way that in the last couple of years, the Rams simply, whether it is personnel or otherwise, have not been able to do. So that is what's at stake for the Rams, who again, walking into tonight, majorly shorthanded, as we got the news this afternoon, courtesy of Adam Schefter, that Jalen Ramsey and Tyler Higbee both placed on the COVID-19 list, will not be in action tonight as they get ready to take on the Arizona Cardinals. Coming up next, though, a very poignant tribute to one of their fallen brothers from a team in the NFL this weekend. We'll do that next here on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appeared via the Goodyear Hotline. Got to give a shout out to the guests that came on the show today. ESPN sports betting analyst Tyler Fulgham, trying to get your pockets right ahead of Monday Night Football with Cards Rams. Of course, our very own Mina Kimes, ESPN NFL analyst and co-host of NFL Live. And then my new head coach, Tony Elliott, introduced today as the head coach of the University of Virginia football team. And if you missed any of that, go to the Canty and Golic Jr. podcast, download, rate, and subscribe. We greatly appreciate it. But Gojo, we've now reached the portion of our show where we got to go three and out.
Sometimes it's the worst. Sometimes it's the best. Best. Either way, we'll get you straight with everything you need to know. This is Three and Out.
Three and Out is brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. And it certainly starts out on a somber note here, Chris. Late last week, saw the news of the passing of former NFL wide receiver Demaryius Thomas. Unfortunately, at the age of 33, the former Georgia Tech player, it just stunned and saddened so many who knew him, played a lot of his career with the Denver Broncos, who honored him this weekend, taking the field in their win by going out in the opening play with only 10 players on the field, leaving that spot for the former number 88 in Broncos orange. They waited for that play clock to run out there, took the delay of game. The helmet decals were out there. I've seen a couple of guys that were teammates with him as well tonight getting ready to don those 88 decals, Chris. And there's no right or easy way to deal with losing someone that you've known, someone that's been a part of that brotherhood here, but certainly, you know, moving to see him acknowledged in that way.
No doubt about it. And classy touch by the Detroit Lions to not accept the delay of game penalty under those circumstances. And I think that the Denver Broncos honored DT in the way that they played in that game. You knew that they would be inspired, and they went out there and they beat an inferior team, and they left no doubt. And they pointed all to the logos, and they pointed to the sky when it came to their scoring opportunities, making big plays, because they wanted it to be evident to the crowd that was on hand that everything that they were doing was to honor Demaryius Thomas and all that he meant to that organization and all that he meant to that community out there in Denver. So good on all parties involved. I thought it was a fitting tribute to a player that was lost way too soon.
Yeah, just hard to really put that into words. And a lot of us who have, you know, unfortunately lost teammates while we were playing, lost teammates after our playing days, it's a difficult thing for so many guys to process here. Denver Broncos head coach Vic Fangio, who coaches the team currently, talked about that moment going on the field with 10 players to start the game.
I didn't have the honor of knowing DT, but the people in our building, the 10 players and the multiple amount of coaches and workers in our building, and then you could just feel the outpouring of love and sadness within the Denver community. It was, you know, we wanted to tribute him any way we could. I'd like to take credit for that idea of the 10 men, but it was not me. But when they came to me with it, I said, okay, and talked with Dan Campbell. He agreed to not accept the penalty, and which was a classy move on his part, and the Detroit Lions. They're a classy organization, and John Hussey, the referee, was in on it. He knew about it, but really the credit, I think, go to Patrick. I think he thought of the idea to do that.
And so certainly rest in peace to Demaryius Thomas. Prayers to those that knew him. And the advice is always the same. Love your people while you got them. Check in on them because this is a hard journey. Everyone's dealing with something, and you never know when this comes to a stop. So that's certainly a tough situation handled about as well as you can by those involved this weekend. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. Chris, looking to the world of college football here. Wild ride already for the former five-star recruit Quinn Ewers, the former Texas high school product who, remember, reclassified so that he could join college at Ohio State, where he was committed this season, try and cash in on some of that NIL money, reportedly in the seven-figure area. Well, after the success that C.J. Stroud, the freshman quarterback, enjoyed this year, Quinn Ewers announced that he was transferring and heading back to his home state. He's going to be suiting up for Steve Sarkisian and the Longhorns. So pretty big win for Texas and a kid who lined his pockets in his one season in Columbus.
No doubt about it. It's not really a downside for Quinn, although he's not going to be able to shine where he initially thought. I mean, going down to Texas and being looked at as the heir apparent down there at that program for Sark, it's not a bad way to go. I mean, it became obvious that Ohio State was going to be C.J. Stroud's program. I mean, especially after that performance that he put up against Michigan State, where he tossed six touchdown passes in the first half of that game. Like, there wasn't going to be any room for Quinn Ewers down out at Ohio State, so he did the next best thing, which is going back home and then going back to the University of Texas. I mean, he was a star at South Lake Carroll, and so now he'll have an opportunity to be a star for the Longhorns.
Yep, he was originally committed to Texas, and then they parted ways with Tom Herman at the time in favor of Steve Sarkisian. He backed off and wound up at Ohio State. And this is one of, I think, the great beauties of what's gone on in this era is now, because we've got the one-time transfer rule, guys can get out of those situations. We get more talented guys on the field sooner here. He is probably going to have a good chance to start next year for the Longhorns. And much like when Justin Fields left Georgia or Joe Burrow left Ohio State, we get another very talented player out suiting up that we all get to take in sooner rather than later. But Chris, it is time for a moment of celebration here on Canty and Golic Jr., because today is a very special day. Now, a happy belated birthday to my father, Mike Golic Sr., who was born December 12th yesterday. Love you, Dad.
Happy birthday, Pops. Happy birthday.
But we've also got to keep the party rolling here and wish a happy 32nd birthday to the one and only Taylor Swift here. And Chris, I mean, what can you say about the woman that has given the world so many things here? I'm fortunate to share an age with her and have been along the ride for this journey from afar and watched her completely dominate my life with all of the songs that have defined every stop along the way.
I got you, Gojo. Listen, with the Taylor Swift music, I'm going to have to leave that one to you, brother, because I'm not the biggest Taylor Swift fan, but I will acknowledge that she is a pop icon. What she does for the culture, you got to respect it. You got to give it up for her. And so happy birthday to Taylor Swift.
I'm sure she's listening to this right now, probably a huge fan of the show. Taylor, if you ever want, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We'd be happy to bring you on and wish you a happy birthday here personally with all of us as a friend of the program, whether you've actually been on here or listened to it at all. Check out the podcast. I'm sure you got a busy schedule. You got a lot happening here. So
I thought you were about to pull a Mike Jones and actually give out your number on air in the hopes that Taylor Swift was actually listening.
I have slipped up and almost done that in the past. You only need to almost make that mistake once before you just completely erase that from your memory.
Got it.
Sure that's not a thing that goes down here. So my number, still not going to be going out over the air. Coming up next over the airwaves, though, stick around here on ESPN Radio. Spain and Fitz got you covered next.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.